This is How to Kill a Piano, episode 24, chapter 19, All Hallows' Eve. Where does gossip end and the truth begin? One person's truth could be another's deception. Both may be innocent, but both may also be purposeful manipulations. Like most things in life, the line is gray and undefined. I had grown used to playing in that gray area. It makes the world much easier to find small comforts in without attempting to push everything into boxes of good or evil. Throughout the 19th century, there had been hundreds of spiritualist mediums that flourished across the world, but there were very few who would call themselves a master medium. These were very rare indeed. Master mediums have the ability to command a wide spread of breathtaking divinations and apparitions. These, in turn, lead to both fame and great fortunes for most of them. That's not to suggest that mediums are genuine. I admit, I wanted to believe because I missed Uncle Charlie and would do anything to get him back, or at least have a chance to say goodbye. As Charlie always told me, all mediums, unequivocally, are fake. Calling one a fake medium is a redundancy. Anyone can claim to successfully talk to the dead. I take no issue with those folks. It's those who claim that the dead can speak back and then prey on the pocketbooks and emotions of the grieving. Those I hold a special hatred for. Scroodius knew of the scam better than anyone, as he had often been the one responsible for the conjuring of spirits in an otherwise virgin seance chamber. I don't know why he allowed the mere mortal mediums to take credit for his conjured constructions, but when Scroodius put his mind to something, the ghouls, ghosts, and goblins seemed to really come out to play. Charlie was gone. I didn't know if he was coming back. The sky was full of dark gray clouds when I pulled the car into Sarah's driveway. I opened the door to get out and heard a voice say, "Rough night?" It startled me before I saw Sharon running up on all fours as she morphed into the human-like form she often presented with Sarah. "Wait, you recognize me?" "I hardly recognize me," I stammered. "Well, the car was a bit of a giveaway, and you don't stink of demons, but you certainly..." Sarah sniffed the air around me. "Have a hint of their dirty work all over you. Oh, I can't help but notice you look much older all of a sudden. Are you okay?" "Charlie's gone. They put me in a box and told me I had to join them, and then this, I stammered incoherently. Sharon put a hand on my shoulder in comfort. "Whether you like it or not, this was always destined to happen to you. It looks like it may have happened sooner than anyone expected, but we brought you here to help Charlie. I'm sorry you didn't agree to any of this." "I have to talk to Sarah," I urged. "Sarah's not in there right now. She's attending to other matters, and maybe it's best she doesn't see you like this just yet." "Why are you two always so cryptic? Can't you tell me anything useful for a change?" I begged as I shook my hands out in desperation. I could feel pain shooting through the backs of my hands. "Something useful, huh? You live in a house full of secrets that historically only Charlie can divine. He's been slowly teaching you how to unlock those secrets, even when he's been unaware of them. You have everything you need to find the truth, and it's in that house waiting for you to discover it. Charlie, George, you're the key to everything. You don't need us, you don't need Charlie or what's inside his head, because he's already giving it all to you. And frankly, Charlie's head has been mostly empty these days." I looked through Sharon like she was a ghost and burst into tears. Sharon placed her other hand on my shoulder. "Go home, George. Go home. I promise we will help you make this right, but right now, you're exhausted, you're tired, you're lost, and you need to grieve. You'll be of no use to anyone unless you sit with that pain you're feeling right now and let it fester. As someone who's shepherded millions of creatures of all sorts into the underworld with unfinished business, who have never taken the chance to face their own demons, this is something you need to do before you split your focus. Right now, your top priorities are to protect that book, protect yourself, and look inward to find the truth. Are you fucking kidding me? I snapped. I didn't have the patience for these kinds of games. Is there some kind of handbook you Athenians go by to always be so damn cryptic? I almost screamed with tears running down my face. It didn't help that Sharon seemed to show no sign of sadness or surprise by my appearance, or any mourning for Uncle Charlie. Was this really expected? I can't help but think everyone knows more about my life than I do. George, please trust me. I don't really have any other options, so what else can I do? I got back into my car. The seatbelt whirred back into place. I shifted the car into reverse and headed home. It started to rain as soon as I stepped into the house. I could feel emptiness radiating through the rooms. I put the kettle on and made a cup of oat straw tea. I watched the steam slowly dance from the tip of the spout as it hit the cool air. Once it screamed into the silence of our house, I lifted the kettle from the burner and made my way down to the basement. I found my path through the books to the center of the library and approached the piano. It was right where I left it, an unshakable opposition that has bested me at every corner. I set my empty tea mug on top of the piano. I grabbed an old book off the shelf, ripped out its pages, stuffed it in my teacup, and poured the hot water over top. The ink slowly bled from the page and swirled into the water. Tears rolled down my face. Some landed on the keys, some in the teacup. My goal wasn't to destroy the piano. It clearly wasn't interested in me. But this was the room that shared Charlie's notebooks. So I got to work going through them one at a time. At first, I couldn't find anything out of the ordinary that I hadn't seen before. I was familiar with most of the books in Charlie's library, and never once did I find a personal record of Charlie's that suggested a life as an Athenian. There's always one way to find out if he's really gone, I stated out loud to the empty room. Without thinking, I lifted the teacup to my lips and took a sip. It tasted like musty, soggy paper. Surprisingly, I didn't hate it. And I finished the whole cup. I continued to go through book after book looking for answers until I spotted a journal I hadn't noticed before. I happened upon an entry dated October 30th, 1860. I knew Charlie was old, but this was the first time I saw his handwriting and a date that confirmed how old everyone claimed he was. Then it dawned on me, tonight to this very day was October 30th, All Hallows' Eve, or Devil's Night, as it has come to be known in these parts. This journal entry spoke about Scrutius having a master pupil named Dr. Henry Slade. He apparently converted more believers to the spiritualism bullshit than any other medium of the time. He often conjured messages upon slates because of his ability to write with a piece of chalk secretly, with either hand or either of his feet in a darkened room. Charlie even sketched a portrait of him. He appeared to be a rather handsome man with a large mustache and light gray eyes that reflected back the room. The detail was amazing. Like many con artists at the time, Henry Slade offered $1,000 to anyone who could prove that the slate writing he presented, as if it came from the spirits, was the result of any form of trickery. $1,000 was a lot of money back then. Charlie's journals recounted meeting Dr. Slade in 1860 in Michigan. This was before Dr. Slade moved on to New York and then later London where he saw greater success. Charlie's writings seemed to express skepticism when he first befriended Slade. He wrote, "Dr. Slade seems to be yet another poor excuse of a charlatan preying on the broken-hearted and vulnerable." Charlie taught me that anyone who claimed to be a fortune teller usually was looking to stroke their own ego, fill their bank accounts, or both. There was only one creature I've ever met that knew the future, like actually knew it. And they didn't know it through any kind of psychic means. They simply had access to the right books. When Sarah revealed the world of the Atheniums to me, she failed to mention the most important one of them. And as much as I love Uncle Charlie, it wasn't him. The basis of our entire culture is that we believe we are the most free and most privileged place in the universe. If that proves to be untrue, we'd have to rethink everything. We would have to admit that other places have done it better, that we aren't perfect. So instead, we choose to place people in charge who tell us what we want to hear. In reality, we are all children who go to sleep believing in fairy tales, even as adults. For a long time, I was one of those people. I truly believed Charlie might live forever. Then I grew up and I realized we're all mortal. Then I started taking piano lessons and I learned what Charlie was. And I thought maybe he really would live forever. Like everyone, we all meet our end eventually. Even gods die. Holidays are usually a lot of fun when you're small. They bring us presents, scavenger hunts, amazing feasts, and the gathering of friends and families. Halloween had always been my favorite, so it was strange that I had allowed it to creep up on me in this way. I rested the journal on the piano bench and kept paging through. My fingers mindlessly toyed at the keys as I read the journal entry. It detailed friendly meetings between Scroodius and Uncle Charlie. I couldn't imagine them ever being close like this. Surely this had to be one of the demon's deceptions. The journal said that every Halloween, Scroodius would find himself in the cemetery with his face glowing with a mixture of candles and moonlight to welcome the dead back to this realm for one night. Charlie detailed many seances in which Scroodius held where he was able to communicate with those who had passed on. There was no hint that this was a deception of any kind. Charlie always taught me to be skeptic, and this journal entry seemed completely implausible to me. And yet, here it was in Charlie's own handwriting, as if it was true. I realized my face had stopped bursting with tears, and I felt calm. There was a loud bang on the door upstairs. It shook me out of my peaceful focus that I had with the notebook. I made my way upstairs, and when I arrived at the door, there was no one there, but there was a note.
"My dear boy, you are cordially invited to an evening of fantasy, decadence, and magic. All this awaits all those who do not hesitate. Answer our call and attend our annual Halloween seance brawl. October 31st, 10 p.m. sharp. Don't be late. Signed, Mr. Evangeline Eloise Scroodius."
Wow. The balls on those two. First they lock me in a box, steal who knows how many years off my life. They probably killed Uncle Charlie, and now they expect me to willingly walk into this obvious trap? Why not? It's not like I have much left to lose. I flipped the invitation over. It read,
"P.S. We didn't take your Uncle Charlie, but we can help you find him."
Right. Obviously a trap. Well, I read the invitation. Over at the cemetery, Scroodius and Absinthe prepared the ritual as they've done every Halloween Eve for as long as anyone could remember. They dressed in their finest suits and lit candles throughout the cemetery. It looked as if the tombstones themselves had been glowing from a distance. Deep inside the mausoleum, Scroodius was preparing for the ritual.
"We bring you gifts from life into death. Commune with us. Move among us. Spirits, show us a sign."
He spoke to the empty walls as if commanding a large audience. Absinthe walked in, catching Scroodius in mid-sentence. Who are you talking to, boss?
Oh, dear Abby.
Scrutius cackled.
I'm just practicing for tomorrow night. You do know how I love to command a room.
Scrutius let out a laugh that seemed to go on forever. Once he brought composure back to himself, he noticed no one else was laughing. In fact, he wasn't sure why he was laughing himself. He found that this often happened when he was alone, and every once in a while he caught himself doing it, even when Mr. Absinthe was about. All demons did this once they reached a certain age. Mr. Absinthe still had several lifetimes before it affected him.
Right then. Why are you interrupting me?
Scrutius jabbed. I wanted to give you an update about the boy and Charlie, Mr. Absinthe calmly replied.
Did you find him? Ooh, finally!
No, not exactly. I was thinking we might entice the boy to come to our seance if we claim we can contact Charlie from wherever it is that he is.
That's a ridiculous idea. You know dang well seances aren't real. Besides, if Charlie was dead, Cordiva would have already been here singing our praises. You think I'd know? Charlie would have ended up right where we want him.
That might be so, but the boy doesn't know they aren't real.
I've got a better idea. Why don't we pretend to raise Charlie from the dead? That way, we can convince Mr. George to come down to the Mass under his own free will. And then maybe, maybe we can finally be done with this whole charade.
Whatever you say, boss. That's an excellent idea. I wish I thought of it.
Well, be off with you. Go fetch him and convince him or whatever it is you plan to do.
Scrutius turned his back and continued his rehearsals. Absinthe watched entranced.
I can't help but notice you're still standing behind me. I've got lots of work to do, so either go figure out how to entice the boy, or... Ugh.
Yeah, no problem. Absinthe pondered. I may need your hand with the invitations.
Take whatever you need, Abby, and leave me to rehearse,
Scrutius insisted. Absinthe reached beneath the altar where Scrutius had been working and removed a large cleaver that they stored when needed for such occasions. He raised it high in the air. It shimmered in the light as he slammed it down hard on the triangular fiber cartilage of Scrutius's left hand. It cut clean through with only a mediocrum of blood before the hand healed itself at the wrist and Scrutius's arm closed off, ending with nothing more than a stub.
Do you need anything else? Perhaps a lung next?
I'll return this when I'm done. Absinthe knew that the invitation had to come from Scrutius, but he was far too busy preparing to do this himself. Placing an ink pen in the hand, Absinthe held it carefully over the parchment paper and began crafting the invitation. Ah, Abby, don't forget the postscript. That will be most important. Satisfied with his work, he set off to make the delivery. This has been How to Kill a Piano, episode 24. Thanks so much for listening. I'm George Tate, and enjoy yourself. And if you can't enjoy yourself, please find someone else to enjoy, with their consent, of course. We'll see you next time.